the Gaming Guru Podcast. Easily the best gaming podcast in the world. Guru Baby.
It's another week and another opportunity to talk about video games and everything going around in the world of geekdom. I am joined once again, as always, by the lovely Tim Lester down in Cape Town. Sir, how are things?
Good morning, sir. No, things are good. My flat is completely upside down because I'm moving in a week. So I've kind of progressed from my usual chaotic neutral into the chaotic evil. And it's sort of like stressing me out, man. Just looking around, seeing all this like madness around me is kind of freaking me out, but yeah, it'll settle down soon.
Yeah, I always find the weird space when you're in that moving mode where you just like so precious about certain things, and then you get to the point where you're just like, death to all of it. I don't want to see any of it. Just a scorched earth. Like someone will present you the most like sentimental once in a lifetime kind of thing. You'd be like, burn it, because it's just like, don't want to move with anything. You want to move with like basically a backpack, and you know, maybe some fresh underwear, and that's about it.
Yeah, no, we've been brutal. I've chucked away so much stuff. There's no holds barred. Like, we're not taking any prisoners, dude. Like, shit's got to go. So
yeah, 100%. So yard sale at Tim's house coming up soon. Should we jump? We've got quite a meaty episode this week. We're going to talk about. We've got some news, mostly entertainment stuff. I want to talk about the nominees that have been announced for the Game Awards, which happens in the middle of December. We're going to chat through some of the Black Friday specials that have been announced. But first and foremost, we'd like to thank the guys at Glitched, who are now hosting our podcast as well. So if you're on the website Glitched, you'll be able to see our shiny podcast there for your ear holes. And yeah, thanks to them. And hopefully it means more people can hear the stuff we say about things. But yeah, Tim, you want to jump into some of the news you got there?
Yeah, so not that much. A couple tidbits here and there. Just a bit of entertainment news that's sort of been exciting me this week. So there's a new Star Trek movie in the works from a writer-director, Noah Hawley, who worked on Legion, Fargo. Also two great, great series at the moment. No more J.J. Abrams. So J.J. kind of took over the sort of writer production, sort of like showrunner role for the Star Trek stuff in the, you know, a couple years ago in the earlier 2000s. Gave us some really good stuff. I like the fact that they're, you know, trusting more directors with bigger, you know, bigger IPs. I think that can lend itself to finding a fresh audience, finding a fresh voice for some of these stories. And then something a lot of people are talking about right now is this new Lord of the Rings show that's in production with Amazon. Season one's already sort of gotten underway in production, and season two has been greenlit already. And it looks like it's going to be following the story that we know and love, right? The kind of sequel to the Hobbit trilogy, which features the Ring, Sauron, all that good.
I love that you said Hobbit trilogy, because of what Peter Jackson did to the books. Or book. It's like, it's three now, isn't it? I think so. Like,
yeah. Okay. And look, and sort of the one piece that I'm like most excited about is this new Sin City TV show. Like, so I don't know if anyone remembers the Sin City movies that came out. I think there was one like 2014 and one a couple of years before that in like 2009, 2010. Dude, right? Like, exactly. So it's going to be put together by original creators Frank Miller and Robert Rodriguez. Frank Miller was the original comic book writer. You know, he made his name cutting his teeth on properties like Daredevil, Dark Knight Returns, Sin City, Ronin, and The 300. If you ever watched, you know, This is Sparta, that was all Frank Miller. That's all him. And Robert Rodriguez, a visionary director, good friend of Quentin Tarantino, who he partnered up with for the Grindhouse films, Planet Terror. He also directed the original Sin City films, and they had this really kind of dark, gritty comic book feel. Yeah. You know, they had those like, you know, white highlights and like thick like black ink type style to it.
Yeah, and to be fair, this was before it was more normalized, like. You know, when Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse and even Scott Pilgrim, those movies kind of like I won't say they relied heavy on it, but people had kind of got used to watching like a graphic novel, you know, in that kind of movie comic book style. And I think Sin City did a lot of work to kind of like forge that kind of territory for the first time.
Yeah, so really excited about that. That's getting into production, and we should be hearing a bit, a lot more about it coming up in 2020.
Awesome.
And that's about it for my news, man. It was a bit short, I feel like last episode I just went like news vomit all over the podcast. So.
Yeah, it was basically the news show last week. But so the other big thing, obviously, at the moment is everyone's got their eyes out and their wallets open for the Black Friday specials that are happening or that are about to be announced. So far, we've been doing a little bit of scouring. I have to say the best stuff I'm seeing is probably on PSN. So if you're a PlayStation user, you certainly can take advantage of some really, really big titles. I mean, obviously, you're seeing the stuff you tend to see. It's like you're seeing like a GTA 5 at like 70% off, you know. So instead of, you know, 550, it's 160 or whatever. But what's really interesting is how many fairly recent games are taking significant price cuts. So, I mean, I won't say I'm a FIFA fan, but I will note that like, FIFA is normally about R1,000 and it came out in September and now it's $700. So that's a pretty good saving. The one that's, you know, I would recommend to most folks, I really enjoyed Borderlands 3. It's down now to $629 from $999. Yeah. And if you want to get the Borderlands 3 super deluxe edition, whatever, it's normally $1,800. It's now $1,200. So $600 saving there. So all about a third off, which is pretty decent. Red Dead Redemption 2, if you didn't get to play that last year, one of the Game of the Year Awards nominees, that's usually 1.5 for the Ultimate Edition. It's now just 5.5. So really good special there. And then other games I'd recommend, Sekiro is now R580, which is a really good price. And Resident Evil, which I cannot recommend enough at this price point, R329.
Oh, wow.
Really good. You jammed that, hey?
Yeah, definitely. I had a lot of fun at that game.
Yeah. And then also, Outer Worlds, still a really, really new game. The paint's not barely even dried on that. And it's R690, down from R930. So 25% saving. So yeah, some really good specials. As you go into the older games, so like you're getting God of War for like $250. You're getting Far Cry 5 for $300. You know, Days Gone for $600. There's some really, really good specials. The Spider-Man DLC for R64. So take a look at PSN. If you're looking for some specials, they really have some pretty dope stuff. And I think it's the kind of thing you can only really do on digital. You know, where you can just go massive markdown. If it sells through the roof, it's not like we're going out of stock or we have to worry about, you know, quickly upholding orders and shipping stuff across the country. It's just download as much as you want. Like, we've made money from these games. Let's try and make it a little bit more. So, I think digital has definitely been the way to go on gaming sales for Black Friday.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've been holding off on my on renewing my PSN subscription, which expired at the end of September, and I've just been waiting for this Black Friday sale because usually those PSN subs, like, they have a pretty good deal on that as well.
Well, you are in luck then, because a 12-month sub will be 25% off compared to the normal price. Yeah. What's worth checking out though is sometimes the online retailers who actually have codes, they sometimes discount as well. Because I don't know, sometimes like they buy it on the special and then they sell it even cheaper just to like, you know, win some customers. So check out a Takealot or an Amazon or whatever. Because at the end of the day, there's no shipping. So they can also, they can fight price quite well because they're not losing from like warehousing in terms of stocking it or distributing it, trucks, all that sort of the labor involved. They're just going, sweet, we're going to buy a crap ton of these cheap codes and sell them for an extra like 5% off. So yeah, while everybody's searching for blood on a Black Friday, you can sit at home buying your stuff online, which is definitely the way to go. So yeah, those are probably the biggest specials at the moment. Obviously, Black Friday is not until the 29th of November. So we're expecting to see a couple more specials, especially a lot of the websites that do these hidden specials. One day only does like up to 100% off specials. And so, and Raru.co.za, they have these great ones where I think every 3 hours they announce a new bundle of specials. And so the point is there, they're trying to get you onto the website as often as possible. Whereas I think other retailers' tactics have been more to let you know what's happening, let you prepare. I suppose they don't want unnecessary traffic. They don't want people just sitting on their website, you know, gumming up the place. You know, if you think of a store situation, you don't want people just at your store not shopping. You want people who are there because they, you know, they want to buy things. So I think now, that perhaps is the logic.
Now, I know people who swear by one day only. I've never like used it or been on it.
Yeah.
But it's one of the, I don't know, it sort of sits in the same category as like a Wish to me. We're like, is this even real? Like, do you even get your stuff?
Yeah. No, look, I bought clothing on there once, like a couple of t-shirts. The specials are really good. I think the thing that always hurts them is just that it's like one or two products that are on like crazy special and the rest are kind of like, okay. So it's one of those things where it's worth putting out a product that you really enjoy, like, or you really want to buy on a wish list on their site. And then if it ever comes up, you'll know. But other than that, it's like, it's not like you're going to go there every single day to go, ooh, what can I save money on today? Because by the end of the year, you'll be like destitute and can't afford to keep saving any more money.
So here's another thing that I've noticed when it comes to, and this is a trend that I've noticed like starting to like creep into the Black Friday sort of mania that South Africa's really adopted. You know, you go on Takealot and I see, because, you know, I do a lot of freelance camera work. And I'm looking at cameras that they're pricing at 40%. They say it's like, let's say 25 to 40% off. But the price that they're listed is the actual price of the camera. And like the old price is just way more expensive than it really is. So I wonder if like some of those prices there are being misrepresented where they're kind of, they say that it's reduced, but really that's the base price. And that percent off is just like their markup. I don't know. I think,
you know,
people need to put stuff in there.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. You know what it is? It's like they have a list price, and what they've already done is they've marked it down to, see, it's unfortunate because it's like how different companies give their specials or their rebates or their cost off. So it'd be a situation we go, they bought it for 100 Rand and the manufacturer has given them the margin to be able to sell it at 80 and still make money. You know, like through a rebate, whatever. But because of the way the system works, it takes a lot. Because remember, they've got millions and millions and millions of things they're listing. The computer pulls in the list price, as in what supposedly they bought it from the manufacturer, even though the manufacturer's given them the money to mark it down. So they're not actually buying it at 100. They bought it at 80. And now when they marked it down to 60, it's only a 20 Rand off. But because the system goes, we bought this at 100, it's a 40 Rand off. You're going, it's not really like... Yeah, so there's a couple of dodgies like that. And yeah, I mean, people have picked up on it and obviously Give and Take a lot and others a lot of flack for it. But it's one of those, geez, from an admin point of view, lesser of two evils. Like for them to go into the system and change all the list prices because the supplier's given them a temporary rebate on the cost. It's like, oh, no, thank you. You know what I mean? We'll just keep our standard list price and have to deal with the social media flack at the end because, you know, at the end of the day, do you really care about the percentage off, or do you care about the price that you're going to pay? Like, do I care if it says, they say 1,000,000% off or 99% off, or is it like, do I like the price I'm going to pay? Yes or no? Like, because that percentage actually means nothing.
That's where we're going. So I think a cool strategy too that I've been using is I put things on my wish list last week and I'm just like checking the prices to see how they change and if they'll come down or if the price, you know, hasn't changed that much from when it was first listed. So that's kind of like what I'm doing to gauge where my deals are coming from.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people do that. I started doing that last year, saved a lot of time. In fact, the next step is actually to put that stuff in your cart, because then if you get the stuff, you literally check out, because half the issue sometimes with these websites is moving from your kind of like purchasing portal or your like shopping portal into the payment portal. Like, I remember last year and the year before, like trying to move to your cart, just time out. Because
the servers are just so overloaded.
Yeah. Everybody's shopping. And I think once it goes to cart, it goes to like, I'm guessing like a more secure kind of audited server, you know, than the standard shopping one. So yeah, as it switches over, I've had carts drop off, and so yeah, I mean, tactics to employ to survive another Black Friday. But yeah, I wanted to talk about you were talking about picking up some older games. You were playing Final Fantasy. I want to know how you.
Yeah, I saw it like sitting on my shelf, staring at me, and I felt bad about like not giving it, you know, enough time of day. And like, when did it come out? 2016.
Feels about right. Yeah,
feels about right. Right. Yeah. So playing through it, I'm like, this game is definitely good, but I feel like it was a better 2016 game than a 2019 game. As far as the open world, the way that it's been used and employed, I mean, there were quite, you know, a lot of games are going for that open world feel in 2016, and a lot were doing, you know, some really cool stuff with it, and others not. So I think as far as it's a good Final Fantasy game, and I can see them employing, you know, the same kind of system of open world, you know, and skills and kind of that live action combat going forward with their remake of Final Fantasy VII. It would just make a lot of sense to use the same engine and similar systems across those properties. And I think they've given a lot of really good support to the game as well, with the new additions, with all the additional content. I mean, if you're into it, like, there's so much content to get into. You know, I'm kind of beelining through the game because a lot of the content that I've been presented with is stuff I've seen over and over again in all these open world games. Like, hell, can you go here and fetch this for me? And then sometimes you don't even have to take it back to them. It's like your job's just done as soon as you fetch. You know, a lot of that stuff. And a lot of running.
400 of these for no reason. Like,
yeah, and I'm wondering, like, you know, if I collect all these dog tags for this guy, is he going to eventually give me something, or am I just wasting my time? So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm enjoying the combat. I enjoy the story, and I'm just letting it, you know, I'm taking it easy, not taking it too serious. I'm just like giving it the time of the day that it didn't get from me, like, you know, when I picked up the game first.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about backlog. That's the one thing about, you know, Black Friday or these kind of special seasons is where you just start fueling that backlog. I mean, I was going through Steam, just clearing up some hard drive space. And I look at some of the games, like, and the amount of time you played, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 2 hours. You're like, what? I was going to play that game to death and did not. You know, they catch you with those things like, buy every GTA for like $100 or something. You're like, whoa, GTA 1, you know, San Andreas, Vice City. I'll definitely play those. No, you won't. Like, you'll play GTA 1 for like half an hour just to remember, like, oh, that's what it was like. And then realize the graphics are garbage compared to modern standards. And then you'll never play it again. So I had a weird moment this week where I've been playing a lot of Modern Warfare and, you know, doing the grind, gold, you know, getting my gold skins on I got my shotgun and my M4 because I'm a terrible person. Sick. And I got them and I was just suddenly like, and it's not fun anymore. It was just like, just not fun. It was just weird because you've been grinding for the obvious things. You've been grinding for like calling cards and emblems and skins and stuff. And then suddenly you're just like, eh, like it just stopped being fun. It was so weird. Yeah. So maybe I need to like stop the grind and start playing more with like some mates and all that, a little bit more casual. But it was just weird. I don't know if it ever had happened to you where you're just like, you're playing a game that you like, and I put an inordinate amount of time. I think I had about 2 days of solid play on that game. Yeah. And it's only been out for like a month. I don't think it's been out a full month yet. And
it has happened to me before.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, you know, I'm not having fun anymore.
Yeah, particularly because I play like a lot of ARPGs, right? So I play a lot of Path of Exile and so on. And if they do have a kind of particular chase item or one of these sort of kind of like shiny goals for a league, and you know, I'll make a fair amount of goals for myself, but once you reach that goal, it's like you reach the finish line in your head, and even though there's so much more to do in the game, there's something about it that feels concluded, and you're like, I think I'm done. I think I'm done here. My work 100%. Here is done.
Yeah, so that happened, and now, ironically enough, playing Path of Exile and Dota, so can always go back to the good old Dotes.
And how's your initial experience of Path of Exile been? This is the first time you're playing it, right?
Yeah. It really is not bad. It's a really good game. The only thing I'd say is it is intimidating. Some of the concepts, like immediately I'd say like the spells, like how spells work and the support things and all that, like that's a bit intimidating, like a little bit more complex than how other people other games work it in terms of like, as you level up, you get more spells, you know, you're having to pick these gems and how they support each other. And then the skill tree, good God, like that thing is intimidating. Like, like I get how they wanted to make it so that any character base model can eventually get to others. And there's like, you know, it's more like you've got proximity. So, you know, whether you're strength, dex or int, and you've got proximity to other kind of like hybrid classes. But I went with a witch and it's just like, oh my word, everything is just so, so complicated. I've almost gone from the beginning. I've picked a build. I'm just going with like fire and elemental and anything that does fire damage. And just any spell that boosts that, I'm going with. Anything that doesn't, I'm like, meh. Like, going to be the most one-sided character. If I go against like a fire immune character, I basically will uninstall the game.
Yeah, look, I mean, there are a lot of intimidating systems in Path of Exile, and Grinding Gear Games are aware of it. And I think that's a big part of their build manifesto going forward for 4.0, for Path of Exile 2. Yeah. Trying to keep the integrity of the depth of their game, because that's what their community digs about it, but also make it a lot more beginner friendly, because a lot of people, you know, they click P, they open up their skill tree, they're like, nope, not a fuck. Yeah. And they just, you know, uninstall, right? Particularly when you're looking at a game where, you know, the Twilight Strand, those first like 15 minutes is some of the oldest content they've ever made. So you're looking at this and going, this doesn't look like a 2019 game. Yeah. And doesn't feel like it either, right? It's a bit clunky. It's a bit, you know, a bit stiff. Like, it does get better as you go through.
If it gets better, then I'm very encouraged, because I'm finishing Act 1 at the moment and I've been reasonably impressed. I keep going, like, it's a free game. Like, this game is 100% free if you don't want to spend a cent on it. So, you know, kudos to them.
Yeah. And that's a, cool. And that's a big draw.
Yeah. Let's jump into Game Awards. If you do not know, every year the Game Awards are hosted towards the end of the year, kind of like middle of December. And so I think it's on the 12th of December this year, being hosted in LA at the Microsoft Hall, I think. So I'm not sure the venue's name exactly. And yeah, we just want to walk through some of the nominees, chat about, like, you know, do we agree, disagree, who we would pick in each category, let's do it. So I think the big boy or girl is obviously Game of the Year, and you've got six nominees. You've got Control, Death Stranding, Resident Evil 2, Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and The Outer Worlds. Some pretty heavy hitters, but the one thing I will say, it doesn't feel like last year where there were like two standouts. You know, for me last year, it was always gonna be a coin toss between Red Dead Redemption 2, and God of War, with Spider-Man kind of going, I guess if enough people vote for it, it could win, but like wasn't on the same tier as those two. Yeah. And you go, this year, sure, really anybody's race. I think my money personally would be on either Control or Sekiro, just because of how much I enjoyed it. But that being said, I can see any of these games winning.
Yeah, my money would also be on Control or Sekiro. What I'm curious about is how, I mean, okay, so this list, presumably they had ideas for who was going to be on this list, you know, before it was released last week. Like, what I want to know is, okay, Death Stranding, like, just released, and it's nominated for, like, 8 or 9 categories or something. It's just, like, all over this list. You know, like, how does a game just release, and they get into all these categories?
Yeah, there's a lot of politics behind that. I worry that we've got a case of the Emperor's New Clothes sort of thing, where it's just like, you know, well, it's a Kojima game, so it's probably going to be good. Let's just, like, put in the nominees list. You know, you just read the reviews on Metacritic, and I think they nail it, because they go, it is so different, it is so weird, it's not for everyone. Kojima's done it, he's finally been unleashed by, you know, what was Konami and all that sort of stuff. And then other people going, yeah, this is wanky and bloated, and it's not a very good game, and it's like, it's closer to art, but not in that like clever make you think way, more in that like hit you in the face high school art project type thing. We're going, it's clever, it's ironic, it's meaningful, yeah, we get it, it's also just not very entertaining. You know, so at the end of the day, we're making games. It's game of the year, not, you know, audiovisual art project of the year. So it is a fine line. That's where I think Control and Sekiro do really well, is that like they are games, but geez, the game direction and the art style and the just the story and the lore, particularly Control, there's some levels where you don't know if it's a game anymore or like has the game ended. You like the credits are rolled, but like you're still playing. There's so many really good moments in that game.
Wow.
Optimization wise, it struggles a little bit on my PlayStation. I don't have a Pro, so it has some frame drop issues. I don't know if like technical stuff does hurt your chances of winning Game of the Year. It is a voted thing, so I don't.
Yeah, a lot of people did echo that. That it, they say that it kind of struggles at the hard. Well, the hardware struggles at the game, at least on PS4 base. Yeah.
With Sekiro, I can't remember dropping a frame, and that thing is so trigger sensitive. It has to be in terms of like the gameplay style. The only thing is, once again, it's a little bit hardcore, a little bit fringe, and so there's always the gatekeeping aspect of it. So, can a game of the year have as much difficulty gatekeeping as that? You know, or have you already priced yourself out of the market? If you know what I mean, in terms of like being too elite for some, which is where like a Smash Bros. Just goes, "Hello, how's it? I'm for everyone." I couldn't believe that Smash Bros. Only released in this calendar year, because it feels like it's much older.
Yeah, yeah, it does. With so I wanted to know. Okay, so with Death Stranding, here's the thing. So since it came out last week, there've been a lot. Like everyone's posting their reviews, and it's been very mixed. Right, the reception has been very mixed, and it was. I think I remember Jim Sterling mentioning. Well, he gave it a bit of a bad review. Look, like, I have a clear idea of what kind of games Jim Sterling likes and which he doesn't, right? So you kind of got to take that with a pinch of salt.
And that does help, yeah.
Yeah, but what he said, though, was, you know, this is a vision of, let's say, Kojima Unleashed is the tagline, right? Like Kojima, where he has complete creative control, no one is holding him back, and this is his unfiltered vision, 100%. And Jim Sterling asks, is that, you know, does that make the best game?
Yeah.
You know, if it's just his vision with no other people saying, look, maybe we should cut this here. Maybe we should like move this over here to this side. Or, you know, does that give us the best game from the studio? Or does that give us like the best Kojima art project? You know what I mean? He made the game that he wanted to make, and a lot of people are digging it, right? And some people aren't. On the other side, you have like, you have SkillUp, who was talking about Death Stranding and how the thing that really sets this game apart and the real success story of it is that no one's really talking about how, you know, Kojima went in, built the studio from the ground up and created a Game of the Year contender. Like, you know, simultaneously, he put this all together. And like, that's kind of unheard of, right? To start his own independent video game production company, kind of from the ground up, completely on his ace with a couple handpicked people, and they managed to put this together in a pretty robust time frame. And like it's a visionary game. I mean, like they're not like everything here is built from the ground up, you know. And besides, I guess the engine that they kind of work closely with Guerrilla Games on.
Yeah.
So that success story, I think, needs to go hand in hand with the actual game itself.
Yeah. Like, and I mean,
the production of it.
As you say that, same with Outer Worlds. I mean, it released, I think, the week before Death Stranding. Seemed interesting, but no one certainly did not have the hype, you know, that a Kojima game was going to have. It's a Game of the Year nominee. I think it doesn't really stand a chance of winning. You know, if I'm honest, I think, out of those, it's probably got the least chance, that and probably Smash Bros. For winning a Game of the Year. But the other four, certainly, and maybe it's a Resident Evil is probably not a great pick because it being a remake, it's unlikely and also quite fringe in terms of difficulty and horror genre and all that. So probably looking at the three, of which is probably Control or Death Stranding are likely to win. That's me like doing the politics of it. It's interesting that you say about how Kojima is in this situation where, you know, you're on the one side of the spectrum of going, you are this artist visionary guy and you've gone and created the game that you wanted and you didn't have the the typical committee reining you in and making, you know, decisions about like, yeah, but, you know, loot boxes and how are we going to make more money from this and all that sort of garbage. Mm. Whereas at the same time, it feels like you've got other studios. You feel like an Activision having the opposite problem, you know, because it's a case of going, it feels like they're losing their artistic vision in a lot of ways. And in exchange, it's a case of, you know, the committee's making all the decisions in terms of, you know, how things move forward and how the games are created, which is why you get mobile versions of Diablo and, you know, that sort of stuff. Because it's like, you know, we need a mobile game. That's what people want. They spend money on mobile. Let's make a mobile game. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. There's no like the art direction is leading the marketing. It feels like the other way around. So your vote, if you had to put a gun to your head?
Gun to my head, I'd say Control.
Yeah, same. Cool. So consensus. We'll see when the results come out. We'll do a little checklist on how many we got right. So action game of the year. Obviously, this is for the best game in the action genre focused primarily on combat. It is Apex Legends, Astral Chain, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Devil May Cry 5, Gears 5, and Metro Exodus. I've played all of these except for Astral Chain, so I can't really comment on that. Call of Duty is really good. Can't deny that. Apex Legends, spent way too many hours on that. Devil May Cry, I enjoyed it. Felt a little bit easy. You know, when you play an entire game on normal difficulty without dying once, then, you know, you do argue that maybe it's a little bit too easy. Not that that should, like, hinder a game being considered the best or not. And then Metro Exodus, I didn't finish. I just kind of got over how clunky it was. But
yeah, Sam, I'm in the same boat when it comes to Metro Exodus. I feel like, I don't know. Should it be in this action game kind of category?
Not really.
I don't know,
not really,
dude.
Yeah.
It didn't, like, for me, the action was like the weakest part of the game.
Yeah,
but the
definitely.
Story, the survival elements, like that, those are really strong. The action for me, I'm like, this shooting, moving around, like it just feels so bad.
Yeah, you were like a tank. It almost felt like you're on a skateboard or something, like rail sort of system rather than being fluid. You know, if you compare certainly to like an Apex or a Call of Duty where your character is so fluid. Yeah, so I think here you're probably looking at Devil May Cry, Call of Duty, or Apex, with probably COD or Devil May Cry being the most likely winners there.
Yeah, I think Apex definitely deserves to be in this category, like up here for a nomination. I think it's definitely one of the sort of like Cinderella stories of the year when it comes to sort of these freemium games. You know, also Respawn, like kind of, you know, showing us that they're one of EA's like best studios that they have under their wing at the moment, just with what they're able to produce. They've got, you know, Apex. And now, didn't they also do the Jedi Fallen Order?
I don't know. Is it Respawn? I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, I think what was great about it was the case of going, it was announced and playable immediately. It's like, hey, we've got a new game and you can go download it now if you want to. There was no like, hey, it's announced 5 years from now, the game comes out, it's called Anthem, it's broken, it'll brick your PlayStation and give us more money.
Yeah, quick side note. Yes, it was Jedi Fallen Order is Respawn Entertainment. Oh. So they were busy working on that and they were like, cool, here's another game for y'all.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so
casual flex.
Yeah. Next category is the action adventure game. So here I think what's pretty obvious is how many Game of the Year nominees are in the action adventure genre. So Control's here, Death Stranding's here, Resident Evil's here, Sekiro's here. And then we add onto that Borderlands 3 and Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening. All phenomenal games. I think it always sucks when you go, what are the chances of you winning the action adventure genre and not winning, you know what I mean, the game of the year? Yeah. So say Borderlands wins this, but it's like, how did it beat the other five and not get nominated for game of the year? So it's a bit weird. So you almost go, sorry, Borderlands and Zelda, you're unlikely to win this category. And then because this genre is basically the game of the year genre, it's probably going to be the same nominee, the same winners. So Control, Death, or Death Stranding to win that. Cool.
I feel like Metro Exodus could have probably done better in this action adventure genre, to be honest.
Than in
than an action game.
It's so weird. You got action, then you got action adventure. Like, okay, so more adventure or less actiony? Like, how does the split work? Okay, art direction. Once again, Control, Death Stranding, Sekiro expected to be there. And then we're adding in Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening, Sayonara Wild Hearts, and Gris. I haven't played those last two, so can't comment. But both those three, the art direction is... I mean, as much as I did not enjoy Death Stranding's gameplay, I cannot fault the art direction. It is beautiful, stunning, it's scary. It's like it's really, really well put together from a direction point of view. Which, let's be honest, is actually Kojima's strong point. I don't know that his like game design is as good as his art direction, if you know what I mean. Like, you almost want someone who like creates a game in terms of like the mechanics of the game, and then goes to him and going, cool, can you package this gameplay in a way that like is artistic and, you know, thought provoking, and you know, give him a Tetris game and he'll make it look, you know, vivid and compelling. But essentially the gameplay is not his to design.
So I feel like Death Stranding is probably a really strong contender in this category. Same goes for Sekiro. Like, the art direction of just the bosses, the world, just look so beautiful. Like, I was really into it. Really like sucks you in. But that's, you know, From Software games do that, right? They're really good at establishing like a world and really making it feel real and giving a lot of lore to that and depth to that.
So. Yeah, and I think especially because they do their normal thing of every building or structure you see in the background is a real thing. It's not like, oh, that's just a sprite background that, like, you know, when you get super close, you're like, oh no, this is just a 2D like wallpaper. You know, you get a real sense of the size and the scale. And I think especially given the fact that one of the key mechanics is that you're a ninja, and so verticality is a big part of the gameplay. You know, the size of the world is phenomenal. But like you said, it's something they've done before. That's kind of thing From Software games are synonymous with, but without being, I think, as oppressive as some previous ones. So like if you think of Bloodborne and Dark Souls, sometimes the world feels almost like the other enemy that you never get to defeat. Here, the world feels like a lot more on your side because you use the structures to rappel off, and that's cool. So some of these other categories are a little bit harder. So audio design, it's very, very surprising that Call of Duty is on audio design, because the one thing it's been given so much flack for is how bad the sound is from a mixing point of view. They're saying footsteps sound like you're basically an elephant. Like, having played like some of the things like the jets and that are so loud you cannot hear anything. And they might go, that's just like what it's like in real life. I don't want to go deaf in my game. Like, I want to have fun. I think people forget about that. My vote would go to Resident Evil if I just think about the sound design. Jeez,
I was thinking the exact same thing, dude.
The use of like you hear gurgling of zombies as you go around corners, that Mr. X. I can't stop hearing DMX every time he plays now. So good there. I'm just going through some of the other categories because we don't want to like wade through a lot of them. Community support, you got Apex Legends, Destiny, Final Fantasy, Fortnite, and Rainbow Six Siege. I think without having played too many of these, you always see how much support Fortnite and Apex Legends give to the community. So very strong contenders there. Content creator of the year, I can't really comment on. I don't really consume much of these guys' content. As for esports coach of the year, esports event of the year, you've got the big six as expected. The Overwatch Finals, Evo 2019, Fortnite World Cup, IEM Katowice, League of Legends World Champs, and the International. Obviously, being a Dota fanboy, I'd vote for the International. But the Fortnite World Cup certainly looked impressive in terms of what they did. I mean, to make a game like a Battle Royale come alive, you know, in a stadium, you know, for everyone to watch and understand, is obviously not the easiest thing of the year to do. Esports Game of the Year, once again, no real new contenders. It's Counter-Strike, Dota, Fortnite, League of Legends, and Overwatch. You'll probably see Fortnite being a very strong contender here, having hosted their first World Cup. So that's probably the vote there. Esports Host of the Year, I won't comment on because I don't know enough of the others. As for esports player as well, there's been a bit of flack, I see, because of Kyle Geisdorf, the guy Bugger, who won the Fortnite World Cup. A little bit of flack there because they're basically going, yeah, who is this kid? Like, what has he done to, he's won one event, you know, now suddenly yeah. he's esports player of the year. You know, you've got guys like Faker on there and Simple who are just like God tier for multiple years. So, yeah. As for esports team,
this was the first year that Fortnite had their World Cup, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so I think that's probably why he's there, because it's kind of like a historic event and he was the first winner, you know?
No, 100%. That's what I'm saying. I know that's why he's there, but like the guys he's up against, I mean, good God. It's like
absolute legends, right?
Absolute royalty, yeah, 100%. Okay, esports team of the year. For me, without a doubt, it's either Team Liquid from CSGO or OG Dota.
Definitely.
Just from a pure dominance point of view. So, I mean, OG back-to-back TIs, no one's ever done it. And also the fashion that it was like almost, untouchable.
Undisputed.
100%. And the fact that they weren't doing like these tried and tested strats, carry support heroes and all sorts of weird stuff was going on. And like, they were just unstoppable. I mean, they created almost like, they almost became this OG banning meta where you go, we don't ban these heroes against anyone, but against OG we do, because otherwise they just, you know, auto win. And then obviously Team Liquid from a CSGO point of view, they've been crazy, crazy dominant this year. Family game of the year, I just wanted to bring out this interesting because all Nintendo. Like, yeah. They've decided that's where we belong, this is where we play. And having played all of these, I have to say, well, I haven't played Ring Fit Adventure, to be fair. Having played the other four, the thing that just stands out is that they are fun without feeling childish. You know what I mean? These are, yes, family games, but at no point do I play these going, oh my word, I'm playing a kid's game. Like Luigi's Mansion 3 was phenomenal. Like super, super good game. Smash Bros. Are a lot of fun. Super Mario Maker is some of the most hardcore gaming you will see like on the internet. It is ridiculous. And so anyone tell you that's a kid's game is, you know, is smoking something. Fighting game of the year. I've only played Mortal Kombat and Smash Bros. So those would both be my contenders. But I know sometimes that the FGC guys, they love their like super technical stuff. So I don't know like how things like Dead or Alive 6 or Jump Force fit into that space in terms of, you know, being much higher level technical fighters than perhaps the others. I think the last one, we'll talk about here because obviously you don't want to run on too long. Fresh indie game. I don't know if you played any of these, but like Disco Elysium, I've just heard nothing but good things about.
Awesome.
Definitely on my checkout list. I'll wait for a good special on like a Black Friday setting. Kind of RPG, top-down isometric view everyone's raving about. For my friend Pedro, I played. It's weird. There's a psychotic banana that you're this assassin, and just a lot of fun. And then Untitled Goose Game is just so much fun. Like
I've heard great things as well.
Yeah, Goose Game is so great. The memes are amazing as well. But basically, you just play a naughty goose, and like, what more could you ask for than to go around and just fuck people shit up as a goose?
my niece really digs it. My brother-in-law got it and plays with her, and it's a lot of fun. Just being a naughty goose.
There are at least another 10 or 12 other categories, which we won't go to, from like sports racing game to score and music to strategy game, best vocal performance AR VR game. Check it out. I think maybe you and I should probably put our votes together and see how accurate we are predicting. Put our podcast credentials on the line. We'll vote for each category, even the ones we haven't played any of these games. So like for mobile game, I've played one of them. Let's put our votes on and we'll publish those and see what you guys think. Let us know your thoughts. But thanks again. I can see this running on hectically long if I go any further. So we're going to wrap it up there.
I do want to bring in before we wrap up, so in the next couple of weeks we're probably going to do our sort of 2019 wrap episode, which is going to talk about kind of like the good, the bad, and the ugly from 2019, the best and the worst of gaming entertainment 2019. So if anyone out there has got any comments about that, got any thoughts, please hit us up on our brand new Twitter handle.
Our Twitter handle, of course, is at Guru Podcast, Guru underscore podcast on Twitter. And otherwise, you can get hold of Tim at Tim and a Fish, and I'm at the Gareth Woods. Yeah, thanks a lot, guys, and we'll be catching you next week. Cheerio.
Peace.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Easily the best gaming podcast in the world. Guru Baby.